Hello, welcome to today's County Road Bobblers podcast. It's myself, Witch, and I'm joined by Matt Barry, one of our fellow supporters group and a fantastic lad. How are you doing, Matt?
Yeah, really well. Thank you. Great to be back on.
People won't be able to see, but there's like a bit of a light show going on in the back of my couch at the moment. You know, there might be people queuing over Christmas for this kind of light show that he's got, but yeah, the joys of the audio only. Sometimes you miss out on these things, but you don't get to see my face, which is definitely a face for radio and not for the kind of visual elements. But it's been a busy week, hasn't it? There's been lots going on. I think without tipping into the derby too much, I don't really want to go into the kind of nitty-gritty, but let's talk about VAR in general, Matt. So without going all Alan Partridge, VAR or not VAR. What's your kind of take on VAR this season? Obviously, you know, a bit of a dip into what's been going on the last couple of weeks as well. But you're a fan of it. How's it being applied? Can we improve it?
I think there's nothing wrong with the technology. It's just operator error, and the problem that we've got in our league is that VAR was brought in to sort out the mess that the PGMOL had created with this current pool of referees and officials, and then they made the cardinal error of putting those people in charge of the technology that was there to correct them. So you've got the same people making the same mistakes, not just on the pitch, but also off the pitch. But when you look at other leagues and you look at tournaments where it's been applied and it's been applied effectively, then you can see how it works when it works well. And it's, as I said, I think it's purely down to operator error in this country. And they're reticent to bring in the automated offside, which will sort out all sorts of problems. And you wouldn't have had certain clubs screaming for replays if that sort of technology was in already. I think that once the PGMOL get themselves sorted out, if they can get themselves sorted out and get rid of this current crop of extremely, extremely poor officials, then I do think we will see an improvement.
Just to pick up on one of the things you've made a couple of the kind of really good points there, and one of them is the kind of pool of referees. You know, it's something that I think I've consistently kind of been baffled by, that you can have this highest grossing league in the world where everyone tunes in and TV deals are out of this world. You know, they keep just getting bigger, bigger, and bigger. You know, we've got the best players, the best coaches, the best managers. There's a, you know, a clamour for any up and coming manager to come to the Premier League. You know, and we don't, you know, quite often actually, you know, the English managers are getting less and less. You know, it's not about what nationality you are, it's about your ability. You know, so we're seeing obviously, you know, a massive influx of, you know, of great managers, coaches and players. And it doesn't really matter, you know, where you're from. If you can come here and obviously do the business, then that's great. But why are we still so faithful to sticking on to, you know, the English pool of referees? You know, obviously the World Cup now, you know, the European Championship, you know, you've got referees from all over the world. Why wouldn't a product like the Premier League try and get the best referees, no matter what nationality you are, no matter where your experience lies? Why wouldn't they try and recruit them into the Premier League? Do you think that's a stumbling block?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. I mean, there was a story maybe in a week or 10 days ago where I think it was Michael Oliver and Darren England, that they were officiating a game in Saudi Arabia. So it's not as if there aren't other leagues, albeit it's not a top five European league per se, but it doesn't stop our referees from going to other countries to referee games. So, it's under the the jurisdiction of whatever FA that was, they were happy to let these people come in from another country and referee their games. So I don't see why, you know, we can't do it over this country. I mean, I would probably hazard the guess that the Premier League, the FA, PGMOL, I'd say that we've invested so much money in these referees, that, you know, they want to see them out, or they want to make sure that, you know, they get their money's worth. But, you know, from the point of view of the quality of these officials, and they're not getting any better, you know, that season by season they're getting worse. Then, you know, I think that a Premier League referee gets paid in and around about £100,000 a year. You know, and you have to look at it from the point of view of, I get it, it's a pressurized situation, but every week people are talking about officials just as much as they're talking about players. And when I first started watching, certainly going to the game regularly, there'd be a couple of referees every season. You think, oh, we're not going to get anything off of him. You know, Martin Atkinson was one. Uriah Rennie, he was the worst in. But you just knew you were never going to get anything off of them. But now, you could probably name half a dozen or eight referees where you just think, oh, we'll get nothing off of it. We never do. You know, it's just this current crop of officials are just synonymous with, you know, just poor officiating, poor judgment, poor interpretation of the rules, and they take it off the field and take it down to Stockley Park, and they're just as bad using the technology which was supposed to eradicate the errors.
I mean, you hear professionals talking about it all the time, and you're saying the certain officials don't understand, you know, the game and the way it flows, and certain, you know, certain decisions that you know that the players make within the game, you know, when they foul players and, you know, they do certain things. But do you think obviously Henry Winter and I know Keith Hackett's talk about pathways, you know, and talk about young players and, you know, that might not just make the grades professionally in terms of football, of becoming a professional football player, but being rerouted towards actually being officials in the game. Look, it's easy said and done, isn't it? You know, when you're 19, 20, and your whole life is geared towards football, someone saying you're not going to make it, you know, do you fancy becoming a ref? It's a massive culture shift. But you do look at some of these referees, and I'm not going to stereotype, but you look at them and you think you've never kicked a ball in your life, or you don't really understand the game. Do you think if there was a massive culture shift towards working on that pathway, you know, and picking up some of them players that might not become professional footballers, but, you know, actually saying, look, there's a career for you here on, as you say, you know, like 100 grand a week, or, yeah, sorry, 100 grand a year. 100 grand a week, we don't like that. But you know, actually having that massive wage, it's a decent job, a great career. Do you think they're selling that enough and doing enough in the pathway situation, recruiting players that have actually played at a good level?
I don't think so. I mean, I heard a discussion about this in the week. I think it's a fantastic idea. You know, you can get people, you'll get people who, you know, sadly fall out of the system, and, you know, they'll fall out of love with football. But, you know, this is an opportunity for them to stay, you know, within the game. And it's, you know, £100,000 a year. I know there's a lot of hoops you've got to jump through, and I know there's a lot of things you need to do to get to that level. But, you know, you think about what sort of life they would have, you know, trying to find a job outside of football, because you're absolutely right. You know, they throw their life, their heart and soul into, you know, wanting to become a professional football player. And sadly, if they fall out of the system, then, you know, they're going to have to go and find a 9-to-5 job, or they're going to have to find something that's going to, you know, take the place of a football. So if they can stay within the game itself, albeit as, you know, as a referee, then, or an official, or get onto some sort of fast track or pathway. You know, these are people who are still, they're in touch with a modern game. And you look at some of the referees now, and you think to yourself, you know, what is their back? We don't know their background. What is their background? What What have they done? Have they done anything, you know, from a sporting point of view, or have they just stumbled on a career as a referee? You know, they struggle to, some of them struggle to interpret the laws of the game.
I won't name names, but there's someone that I know through the Bobblers, whose friend was a Premier League referee.
Yeah,
as much £5,000 per game ish, £2,500, £5,000 depends on what game it is. And yeah, I think it's a fair assumption that not all referees have played at a good level. This was someone, you know, that was potentially, you know, a normal 9-to-5 job, and then coming in and doing, you know, Championship, League One, refereeing, but obviously now in the Premier League, and by all accounts, I believe he's a very good official. So I think it's not all cases, is it? You know, there is very good officials that can learn, but I think you've summarised that perfectly, Matt. That actually there should be a talent pool there and a pathway. As some of the journalists have been talking about. Getting them back involved in football, but not having to go outside it. You know, you're gaining knowledge, I think, a knowledge base when you're involved in football. And it doesn't matter whether you've been semi-professional, you know, being involved in academies, you gain a knowledge base and an understanding of how things work. You know, and I don't want to kind of touch too heavily on the game of the weekend, but anyone that knows football knows that foul on Beto is a professional foul. You know, we say it all the time, but we get frustrated as Evertonians because we don't do that enough, I think. You know, I think...
The thing is, the most galling thing about that is, though, Dave, that, you know, Tsimikas got away with three of them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and
mate.
And nothing. So that's where...
Fernandinho was an expert.
The master of it. Yeah, he's the master of it.
Mate, Guardiola employed him to press high up the pitch. And it was all the, you know, hands in the air. Sorry about that. You know, the accidental coming together. He was the master of it. It's all about fine margins. And sadly, certain teams do get a difference, you know, a different level of evaluation sometimes by referees. And I think that's another point I wanted to make is, you know, that we don't ask for, you know, revolutionary things. We ask for consistency, just not inconsistency. And surely that's not a big thing to ask. Just be consistent. It doesn't matter what the game is, what the team is, what the situation is, what's happened last week. Zone all that out and just make a decision based on what you see. Goes back to the old catchphrase, doesn't it? Say what you see. Any official that's looked at that since, say what you see. I'll say what you see was it was a yellow card, send them off. Something and any other decision shouldn't come into that. You know, it should just be this is the issue, it's a yellow card, deal with it. And do you think, you know, obviously, we can't move on from the referee point of view because, you know, it's on a referee's podcast, but do you think that's a huge issue as well where there's limitations of what VAR can get involved with, what VAR can't, surely. You know, what's come up this week is, you know, I heard a few from Bullenstorm to Henry Winter. Mm-hmm. Surely VAR is there to challenge wrong decisions and ones that can influence the game. And it shouldn't really matter or be governed by certain criteria. If you can see it, call it out. Again, say what you see.
It goes back to, you know, defining what clear and obvious is, isn't it? You know, and that was the whole selling point of VAR was it was there to correct or eradicate the clear and obvious errors. And, you know, you've got, if you look at Pawson's performance on the weekend and for every incident where, you know, he had a decision to make that was going to have a material impact on the game, he was right there. You know, there was nothing, there was absolutely no way he could have said, you know, I didn't see that. So the challenge on Beto, yeah, I think he must have been about 5 or 6 yards away from it. And, you know, there's no excuse to say that the body angle was away from him either, because he had a clear view of it. And his fourth official was there as well, watching it.
Matt,
exactly what was happening.
We don't like to sugarcoat things on the Bobblers podcast. He shit his kecks. That's what happens.
Of
you know,
course
and
he
he
did.
did.
Of course he did.
You know, it was that simple, like you say, he's 5 yards away. It happens.
Yeah.
He didn't want to know, and he shit
He
bricks.
had. He had the same. He had the same look and the same mannerisms as Clattenburg had in the derby, where you know he didn't give the penalty on Lescott, and he let Dirk Kuyt fly through the air and almost kill Phil Neville. And just he was exactly the same as that. You know, he was just completely and utterly overawed by the occasion. He was dreadful, absolutely dreadful.
You know, I don't want to get all whataboutism, you know what I mean? Because, look, we all know that, you know, that other teams suffer these things as well. But there's got to be a point where I was horrible when I played football. I was, Matt, I was horrible. Centre-half, always captain, screaming, literally 90 minutes. The next day or the next couple of days, I'd never have a voice. And I'd be in the ref's ear, permanently. You know, the ref would hate me by the, you know, probably first 10 minutes. But surely, you know, if something happens like that where it's a game changing situation, everyone gets around that referee, making him, you know, certainly the captain, just you know, obviously, there was a big thing about Pickford being taken away as the vice captain. Getting the referees here, I know Tarkowski was on the yellow, but just say, consistency, where is it? You know, ask for clarity. Why have you done it? Everyone else join in. Pickford, run from the goal. You know what I mean? Make a big deal of it. If nothing comes of it, then fair enough. But it always feels like we're too nice. Honestly, it just does feel like we're too nice. And you know, it's a consistent feeling sometimes that
it's gotten to the point. It's gotten up to the point on the pitch now where, you know, the captain can, you know, challenge the referee or ask the referee a question. But as you quite rightly say, Tarkowski was already being booked. So if he goes to the referee, he's in his face going, what are you doing? And he can be deemed to be being a little bit aggressive. Then if he's got fear of being sent off. So the laws of the game now are that if anybody approaches the referee in any sort of aggressive manner, who's not the captain, then they get booked. But then what's the consequence for the official? It's nothing. So he can't be questioned after the game. He's not going to come out and answer any questions. You know, he doesn't have to go in front of the cameras and have to say, well, what happened with this incident and why did you do that? So they're getting more protection, more and more and more protection, because they don't want to be challenged on the field. And then ultimately they'll walk off the field scot-free. Don't have to answer questions to anybody. All they'll have to do is fill in their match report, and you know, if there are any incidents afterwards that get flagged in terms of, well, you know, that wasn't particularly a good outcome for a team, then you know, Howard Webb makes the phone call on Monday morning, and everything goes away.
But this is part of the thing, you know, like Conor Cody. Well, it's been interesting to see Conor Cody was on the pitch. You know, obviously within that game, his reaction.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a very different personality than Tarkowski. I think they got on together. But I think Tarkowski's a very steady defender. You know, he reminds me almost of Jagielka in a way.
Yeah.
But I look around that side, you know, I just don't see, you know, a massive plethora is such a captain. You know, do you think he's a captain if Coleman moves away? Obviously, he retires.
I think he's somebody who will lead by example, but he's not somebody who, you know, will direct a team on the pitch. I.e., you know, he's very vocal. You know, Phil Neville had his faults, but you know, you knew who the captain of Everton was when he was on the pitch. I think that, you know, we're crying out for somebody like that. You know, I think if you look at you look at Tarkowski and say, well, you know, it's to say he leads by example, but is he really going to be somebody who Is it really going to be somebody who, you know, who's going to go up to the referee and be, who's going to give a compelling argument to say, well, you're not, we're not getting this or we're not getting that? You know, he seems to be somebody who's, he's a captain by, as I say, he's a captain by example.
You know, I think there is an argument here. You listen to Roy Keane, and the overlap's excellent because it kind of addresses all these kind of stuff. And they talk about, you know, there's a big difference between David Beckham being the captain, if we use a Man United example, and a Roy Keane. You know, they're literally the polar opposites. You know, as you say, the lead by example has almost become the modern day captain. You don't have the kinds of, you know, the fella rollicking people playing in the centre on have yet, but there's got to be a certain element of challenge, hasn't it? You know, and I just don't see a lot of our players doing that at the moment. I thought Ashley Young might have been a bit more like that, grabbing the ref's ear, talking to him, constantly trying to influence, you know, the way he's thinking in the game. And no matter what people say, anyone who's played the games knows that works. You can do it in a polite way as well. You don't have to be a C word, I'll say, but you can say, you know, oh, yeah, that's a good day, you know, blah, blah, blah. Next minute, the decision goes, you're being a dick constantly without being overly vocal, but trying to influence them. And I don't think we do it.
The referees have got the get out jail card free for that, though, because they can just, you do my head in, shut up, you're not the captain, you know the rules, you shouldn't be yeah. challenging me, you shouldn't be in my ear all the time, and they'll just book them. And
well, you don't have to explain after the game, Matt. You know, they're not mic'd up, you know, so they don't have to, you know, within the moment, even though certain teams get, you know, the access to these things, other teams don't. But, you know, they are sometimes without question. So moving on to this, and sorry, most of this is not actually about football at times in terms of the actual playing side, but the media has been a huge talking issue this week, and Everton do seem to be the old flavour of the week when it comes to these things. But do you think that it's been a bit of a trial by media this week, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're the whipping boys of the press, aren't we? You know, we don't. The club doesn't defend itself, which I wish that it would. We're an easy target, aren't we, at the moment? You know, albeit, you know, some things are the makings of, you know, what the club has done. Some things are just completely made up, and you know, I think certain journalists know that, well, you know, the club aren't gonna do anything about it, so we can just carry on saying what we want, or you know, we can put a headline out that's going to generate lots and lots of clicks, and you know, the only people who are going to defend Everton are the Evertonians themselves, and then those journalists are getting exactly what they want because everyone's clicking or everyone's tweeting about it and everyone's tweeting the journalists. And but it's a force of habit for us, because our first instinct is going to be, well, we want to defend the club, we want to defend you know, the people who, you know, who are being wronged. And you know, there was a story from our friend Mr. Hughes last week that got completely blown out of the water, and you know, we haven't heard from him since. But give it a couple of weeks for that to blow over, and he'll reappear again with something that'll tell us that, you know, the stadium's 3 or 4 months behind schedule, even though, you know, the steel manufacturers come out today and said that the roof's all done and the project's ahead of schedule. So
I think you're right. You know, we're almost like the Brooklyn Brawler of the Premier League, where, you know, everyone wants to come up against us and have a bit of a free hit. But it is frustrating. I know you said that the club don't tackle it, but I know as fact they do. People do like to say this online, and I've had the benefits at one stage of listening to the club, you know, and obviously I resigned because from the fans forum, because I thought it was, you know, the right thing to do, because we needed to protest and change the board, which, you know, was imperative. You know, that's obviously happened now. You know, a new future is potentially looming, but not to linger on that. you know, I think the club do their kind of bidding in private. You know, not everyone knows that, and I think the frustration is if you don't see it, then it, you know, might as well not happen. But I think the club are quite aggressive in private, and I think my point of view is they should come back into the public now, and you know, 2023, you know, fan media, everything in between, you know, Sky Sports, and I think it's 365 days a year, it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, it's relentless, and you know, you've got to do one or two things. You've got to, you know, shy away from it or adapt to the times. And I think Everton sits sometimes they are. I've heard this phrase, you know, we're an analog club in a digital age. You know, I don't think we are in all cases, but I think, you know, that there's still room. I'm a big enthusiast in terms of continuous improvement, and I think the club can improve in a lot of ways, and some of that is maybe coming on the front foot, and that might be uncomfortable for certain people at the club because they've been used to doing things in a certain way. Look, they do it privately, no matter what you think, but Matt, I think they should just get on the front foot now. Let's just be different. Let's start challenging some of these journalists. Let's start banning them from the ground. And even if you just make them flipping comments on Twitter and shaving some of them, is that something you'd like to see?
I'd love the club needs a public face of communications. It needs somebody who is front and center, and who isn't afraid to challenge, and who isn't afraid to get on social media or engage with independent fan media and say, you know, listen, that's completely wrong, that's complete bollocks, you know, or they'll say it in a far more professional way than that, but, or you know, there's nothing in that, or if there is something in it.
Well, Matt, would you, or would you just reply and say that's complete bollocks? Imagine the reaction that would get.
I think from
you know, honestly, you said that flippantly, but I work, obviously, I'm in charge of 100,000 people, heads of comms and engagement, you know, for a nationwide business. Imagine the refreshing change of Everton just saying that's absolutely bollocks and just retweeting off the official accounts. It might not be professional, right? But in 2023, communications is changing. You know, we live in the age of social media. You know, the TikTok generation of 30-second videos, everything's changing. Why don't we just get on the front foot? Why don't we just be fresh and relevant?
Well, I mean, what I would say is that, you know, the club now need to, I mean, it will go in a new direction. And, you know, from the point of view of communication, then this is an age-old thing with Everton. Ever since Alan Myers left, you know, there's been nobody who has been engaging with the fans. There's been nobody who you know, will effectively stick up for the club in the media or be visible. So, you know, now is the time to do that. Now is the time to get in front of the stories and be different and make the changes now, because every week there's two or three stories, and it's not just Evertonians looking at it and thinking, oh, here we go again. It's other fans and it's other supporters of other clubs, and then you get, and you know, and I laugh at myself when I say this, but it just winds me up incredibly that you get things like, you know, Lad, a Sport Bible and Sport Joe, and then you get, and you know, and you get stories in there, you know, and you just think to yourself, you know, how has it got to this? Why doesn't somebody just go, listen, that's a nonsense.
Imagine,
and just cut it off.
Imagine the club website tweeting them back saying, imagine this is what you actually believed. just simple lines of saying something as simple as that.
Well, it'd be great. You just get a reply from Everton Football Club, what are you lying for? It'd be incredible.
I know this personally, and it's a team of people that work on the social media team. You know, and there is times where they went pop world after winning, You know, and that it's gone down, you know, the whole thing's kind of erupted when they put that down. And I think, you know, I spoke to like Sir Joe Thomas and, you know, and Julian and people like that who respect the journalists. And I mean, the media is changing. And I think Everton can have a place in that. You know, I think they need someone in there that's slightly different. When these roles are advertised, it's like, you know, university graduates must have this, this and the other. And you get someone in there that's very capable of understanding of the media. But I'd love to just have some random lad in there who just understands Evertonians and just says, just tweet this. You know what I mean? The whole thing that comes on. But I just haven't really got this. And I'd love Everton to be slightly more edgy at times, you know, and attack some of the narratives that are going out there. And, you know, even if they get it wrong occasionally, just be. You know, you see some of the German football sides at the moment, they're doing it. They're getting on the attack. Yeah. They can't have a bit of banter with other sides.
Who are the only people who are stopping Everton from doing it, though, Dave?
Well,
it's Everton, yeah, isn't it? They're the only people who are stopping themselves from doing it.
Yeah, 100%, mate. 100%. And look, I think if you can say one thing to people listening, if you picked up a broadsheet newspaper, whether it be Daily Mail, I'm not going to mention one newspaper, Daily Mirror and other newspapers, would you believe everything that's written down? No. If it's politics, immigration, anything in between, why would you start believing stuff that's written about football? It's no different. It's driven towards increasing clicks and engagement. And often, when you actually read the article, it's different than actually the headline it presents, you know, and quite often fans challenge, you know, certain headlines and journalists defend themselves and say, it's Donald's that write the headlines, it's someone else. Well, yeah. I have a think and I wonder why, you know, when they use this kind of thing, say, Everton will get a 12 points deduction. What did you do? Did you click on it? Did you comment back on it? Well, you've done exactly what the person, you know, who's doing that job role wanted me to do. So my point is just have
exactly
a little bit
right.
Of faith.
And I'm the worst for it. I am the worst for it.
And to be fair, Matt, the other Matt that exists in Daily Mail, I'm the worst for it as well. But we do need to all collectively think, you know, it's designed to drive traffic. And we are the traffic, and we you know, we actively get involved in it. So yeah, it is one of them things anyway. Obviously, the whole ownership stuff is going on as well, Matt, and it's hard, isn't it? Because we haven't got a chairman, we've got an interim CEO. You know, and I'm going to say this now that, you know, my thoughts go out to Bill Kenwright's family. You know, and Everton Football Club, it's a big loss. But we're at a point now where, you know, a massive point in the club's history where there's a new stadium, potential new ownership. There's a new dawn potentially, you know, happening with Everton Football Club. What should we do as fans? Do we need more communication? Are we expecting 777? To come in, but what are your expectations, Matt, of where we are, and how do you feel about the current situation?
Again, a lot of, I think, what people feel is based on what they read and not what they know. You know, the if you picked up a newspaper or you clicked on an article about 777, then, you know, you think, my God, we've done these people around our club. But, you know, they haven't had the opportunity to address the fan base yet, albeit apart from a couple of articles that they've written. But, you know, if you cast your mind back perhaps 12 to 18 months ago, then we were saying that the club needs a whole reset. And I think we're at that point now. You know, we're at the point where there's going to be a new owner. There's going to be a new board of directors. There's going to be a new stadium. You know, we've got a newish manager. You know, I think all the majority of the facets of the club are all at the point where we're almost starting again. So it can be wherever we make it, I think. And, the club can look at the way that the business has been run in the past. They can look at the way the business is being run now and say, right, what do we have to change? And, they can make a conscious decision to bring the club into the modern era, where perhaps some of the business practices and some of the cultural things and practices within the club did need changing, and perhaps haven't had that opportunity to change yet, but now it does. And you can almost modernize the business overnight now with just a change of thinking and a change of culture.
This is something I do regularly in my professional capacity, and and you've always got to look at various levels of what you're trying to achieve. But Matt, if you were to look for a few quick wins as a new owner, what would be your quick wins?
The first thing to do is speak to the fan base. I mean, that's the quickest thing. It would have been obviously the board changes, but that's already happened now. I think there needs to be a fluid and open line of communication with the fan base. I think as a set of fans, we need to see people appointed to the board, or in key areas of the business who are subject matter experts or do have experience in that roles. We can't just have somebody on the board because, they used to play for the club and, they're friendly with the chairman, or, somebody who's a hard worker and, they're gonna do really great because they're Evertonians. It just doesn't wash anymore. Not in the modern world of football. So, we need people who are able to make, decisions and make decisions decisively, make the right decisions for the club, who will act in the best interests of the club. Sometimes there may be decisions that we might not necessarily agree with, or we might not necessarily think, oh right, okay, well, what have you done that for? But
Matt, just to pick you up on that point.
Yeah.
Do you think Birmingham FC might be a point of reference there? Obviously Rooney's come in. Yeah. They were doing fantastically well. On course, promotion, maybe. Two games in, he's getting booed. But it's a massive, massive call by these new owners. Obviously, the big balls, successful in the US, come in and they say, right, we're going to do what we want to do. And they appoint Rooney. Two games in, two losses. I've got to add, by the way, context-wise, I think you've got to give Wayne 10 games, 15 games. But do you think that's what we're talking about in terms of,
Yes. I think if you've got, owners who are going to be, well, we want, Christ, we've had it ourselves, we want a Hollywood manager, and we ended up with Koeman, and that didn't work, and we moved on to the next one and the next one, and the only one that we did have was Carlo, really, who'd done a fairly good job for being the name that he was. But when you look at with Birmingham, then it looks like their owners just want to make a statement, don't they? We own a football club, and we've got Tom Brady investing in us, and we're going to get the biggest name English manager we can attract, and they've done that. They were in a healthy position in the league. The fans were probably on side, certainly with the job that Raoul was doing, and then all of a sudden it's gone 180 degrees now. They've got a manager that they don't like, and the board have made a terrible, terrible decision.
Do you think it's so far? I was watching Get Gotti the other day. Yeah. It was a fantastic quote, which was course, he was a Marvel superhero before Marvel heroes existed. But yeah. Do you think there's a certain element of Ryan Reynolds syndrome now where the Hollywood element has kind of creeped into football, where there is US investors maybe looking, thinking it's sexy investing into football, and you know, the whole bringing your own people and big names, and you know, obviously Ted Bowley, we've seen him spend lots of money, you know, and there's question marks whether he spent it right, and you know, that might be a big thing for him. But do you think the Premier League football division is such? It's in a period of transition, really, of where it is identity-wise.
Yeah, very much so. You know, you look at how much an NFL franchise is to buy, or how much it is to start up an MLS team, and it's cheaper to go and buy an English football team, albeit, you know, if it's not a Premier League club, then, you know, somebody in the Championship. And you know, if you want a bit of exposure, then you get people investing in certainly at the levels of, if somebody like Tom Brady, you know, who's a solid gold, you know, legend in NFL football, and you know, you are going to draw attention to that club. And you know, and again, like you mentioned with, you know, with Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney, then you know, you get people watching and paying attention to that, and people are drawn to that club, and you know, they're interested in what's happening to them. And you know, if you've got you know, the owner of that club then has got other interests, other sporting interests or other sort of media interests, then you know, people are going to go along on the journey with those people. And you know, when you look at the Premier League, you know, something they haven't got in US sports is they haven't got the jeopardy, have they? They haven't got the promotion or relegation in a lot of that. So, you know, this it's a compelling story to tell some people who are, you know, you're going to take a Birmingham, for example, and get it back into the Premier League, and they used to be a Premier League club, now they're not, and they're on their way back up, and it's a story. And you know, it's like the Wrexham story, you know, they've gone from non-league and they're pushing their way up, and you know, I've absolutely no doubt that their aspiration is Premier League football by, you know, by 2030.
Obviously, I'm going to slow you down on the fact that obviously you're a Welshman. And not to kind of say, well, oh, Welshman now, because like the Grims are saying, well, you know what's going on at Chelsea as a scouser. Yeah. But I think for me personally, obviously, I've been watching the Wrexham documentary, and I think they've done really well bringing likes of TikTok in and everything in between. But the biggest thing I've looked at as an Evertonian is looking at the fact they've empowered football people to make the right decisions.
Yep.
They've never overstepped their character mark as owners to say, well, you know, I don't care what you say, we're bringing in this fella or that fella. They've only got involved occasionally where they need a bit of an extra push maybe to get the right person in, and well, they've got involved. Do you think they've literally, again, we keep saying this, but do you think this is where Machiri's gone wrong?
100%. 100%. Yeah, you look at, you know, the first two episodes of the Wrexham, you know, documentary, season one, episode one, episode two, and you know, they go to great lengths of going, we haven't got a clue what's going on, so we'll get the best people we can at this level to go and make all the decisions, and we'll just stand in the background and, you know, be the financial crutch or be the face of it all, and you know, go and get the sponsors and so on to fund it all. But you know, the best decision they ever made was not make the decisions. It was to get people who they knew what they were doing to make the decisions. And you know, when you related to Everton, then you know, that's exactly what, you know, Farhad Moshiri didn't do. And you know, whether or not, you know, there were people at the club who did a fantastic job in saying, listen, we know what we're doing, and you know, we know how to run a Premier League club. And you know, whether Moshiri's taken that and gone, all right, okay, then, well, you know, I'll just be the money behind it. Because if you look at Everton's track record from Moyes through to Martinez, then on the face of it, you know, we were never ever in trouble. We were, you know, we were always on the cusp of Europe, there or thereabouts, if we hadn't already qualified for it. So, you know, we were buying players inexpensively and selling them for good money. So it looked like, you know, all the decision, the right decision makers were at the club, albeit it was probably superficially helped up by David Moyes.
Yeah, I mean, it is incredibly tough, isn't it? You know, and I think football just it doesn't wait. You know, every year it changes, doesn't it? The rules, the pace, you know, where it was 10 years ago isn't where it is today. You know, with 12, even 12 months at a time, the whole thing changes. It's absolutely crazy. You know, you get like the Tom Brady coming to Premier League, and he'll learn again. There will be lessons. And I think, you know, like Ryan Reynolds, Robin McElhenney have literally learned themselves. You can see that. You can, that's what I like about the Wrexham series. You can almost feel they're there, the lessons. But I love the fact that they've shown vulnerability. Being a proper leader has shown vulnerability and being aware of it and empowering other people. And I think they'd be very good at that. You know, and I do question at times, you know, where Everton can learn. You know, I think there are lessons in between. Premier League football is very different, but you know, it is what it is. But
it still shouldn't shop. It still shouldn't stop you getting the best people in the right positions. It shouldn't stop you from doing that. You know, and sadly, I think, you know, we can all take the view that over the last 6 to 7 years that, you know, the right people haven't been in the right jobs at Everton.
As a challenge, maybe they have, but they haven't been given the right responsibilities.
Maybe so. You're right. You know, there is probably, you know, we know there are good people working at the club, and it's the shackles they've had that stop them from doing what they do best.
At a conference with Deloitte and McLaren in July.
Mm.
And their exact example was empowering the right people at the point of the right intelligence. So if you're sat there and, let's do Barry Williams as an example. Barry Williams has got more of a clue on this. Or Lee Mitchell has got more of a clue with that. Wouldn't that matter? Yeah. That's Lee or Barry. Well, you know, if it was your subject matter expert, you wouldn't, you know, we all know as Evertonians that people have intervened in the things. And we've seen the Athletic article saying that you've got to go through like 3 or 4 layers to get a transfer signed off. Just empower the director of football to make the decision, and that's it.
And that's the thing, that's, you know, what we were talking about earlier, where you need the right people in the right places who can make decisive decisions. And the point
of highest intelligence or knowledge. That's it.
But you think about how many players we've missed over the last, you know, 2 or 3 years where, you know, it's had to go, as you say, through three sets of eyes and a requisition form filled out for it to get to, you know, somebody who you're trying to get hold of to make a decision, and somebody's just come in and just bought the player whilst you've been arsing around with shuffling paper and you're trying to get a good signal to ring the chairman or ring the owner. It's just archaic.
So, off your closing point, I want to bring up, obviously, Toffee TV have made a very valid point about unity. I think, obviously, Everton, I think it's fair to say we've been in transition. You know, I think we've been in a place where often at times none of us want to argue with fellow Evertonians. But what we want is the best possible Everton Football Club. We might have all disagreed on what that is, how we get there. But we're at a point where we can't argue no more. All we're getting is flack from the outside. And Toffee TV made a great point before about unity. All together now has been a message, actually, to unite to protest for a better Everton. But all the reasons that made that exist now in terms of us moving forward together. Matt, is it time to unite? Is it time to get together? And is it time to actually really push for a better effort and actually get fancy of it.
Oh, absolutely. You know, as I said earlier, I think we're at the point of the great reset now. And, you know, the divisive things that, you know, we debate outside of the football pitch, you know, are gone now. And, you know, all the things that used to wind people up, I think, outside of the footballing aspect or the playing aspect of it is gone now. The board have gone. The owner's about to go. You know, sadly, you know, the chairman isn't there anymore. So what are we arguing amongst ourselves about now, other than whether you think a player is good enough or not? You know, and that's okay. That's a healthy debate, because that's, you know, that's to do with football. But, you know, from the things that we do see people arguing about online and the things that do aggravate people, then, you know, we can, that's all gone now. We can put that aside and we can get behind each other and get behind the club. You know, all the best, all an Evertonian wants is the best for Everton. And if that is uniting now behind whatever the future is going to look like, then it's something that I think we just have to do.
Spot on, mate. Regardless of how you feel, regardless of what your standpoint was, look at, you know, what Toffee TV have said is a rallying call for me. Support a message together. You know, we're always stronger. All together now has always been a motto for Everton. And the 1878s, obviously behind the atmosphere. Let's start coming together. Let's start actually remembering what we're about. You know, and let's fuck the media off and all them criticisms. Let's start being one fan base, one voice. You know, and we can make a massive difference, because honestly, this fan base is better when it's actually under siege. So that's my only closing point here, is let's start uniting and let's actually back a message for unity from Toffee TV.
The evidence of what we can do when we do put differences aside is that a united Everton can keep Everton Football Club in the Premier League. That's the power of what this fan base can do when it's together. And that is literally lifting a club off of its knees and keeping it in the division. There's nothing that we can't do in it if we're not together.
Exactly, mate. Unity is key. Thank you for listening.